for members only. Golf Smarter number 381, published on April 23, 2013.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Should the USGA roll back the distances on golf balls? With William Carey.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only. William?
Thank you very much.
I am really glad that you were able to have enough time to allow me to crash your offices here.
Now we can get into the really fun stuff the members,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Now, these are the people that are the diehard dedicateds who I love so much. Love them so much. Actually, now that I'm here, we're in Scottsdale, actually in Mesa, Arizona. We're Arizona State University. We're in the shadow of the stadium right mm-hmm. here. And you guys just moved into these new offices.
Well, we're in Tempe. Oh, and okay. So, we're, like I said, right next to Arizona State campus. Mm-hmm. We're actually in one of the greenest buildings in Arizona. It's a phenomenal place for us. And so,
how much... Obviously, the peel, mm-hmm. you know, again, we talked earlier about walking the talk.
Absolutely.
That's great. But is it difficult to get into this building? Was it because
the funny thing is when we decided to move building, it's the Tempe Transportation Center. You can look it up online. This was a major project of love by the city of Tempe when they put in the light rail system. And when we were looking to find a headquarters for Dixon Golf, once we'd outgrown the manufacturing facility area, we went to the city and said, hey, we're looking for a place to go. We went to a number of cities. We went to Scottsdale. We went to Mesa. We went to Tempe. And Tempe said, oh, we want an eco-friendly tenant in this fabulous eco-friendly building that we built. And they showed it to us, and we're like, this is perfect for us. This is where we want to be. And so it was really a great match.
That's awesome.
Made in Tempe, I guess. But the city's been great. So it's kind of a public-private partnership that we've developed with them. And it's been fabulous.
Great. Well, let's get to this because I have a round of golf with a Golf
yes,
Smarter listener.
You need to go
up.
Golf.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why we play this game in the first place, right?
Exactly. That's why we do these interviews, so we can go play these games. Tell me about the manufacturing process of a golf ball. Did you guys have to hire your own designers, or because you'd been making golf balls for so many people, you knew what went into it, you really didn't have to design anything unique?
We actually went through a lot of... The goal was to make an eco-friendly golf ball, so we tried a lot of different items and things, and we looked into, you know, biodegradable and to see the main thing we had to look at is it couldn't affect our performance, because we knew that if we made a ball that was eco-friendly but only performed 75%,
dead in the water,
then it's a gimmick. No one cares.
Right.
I mean, people will be eco-friendly doing something else and not golfing.
Right. I recycle.
Yeah, I don't need to worry. I want to score.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I want to hit the ball further. I want to score. And so our guiding principle on that was we wanted it to be eco-friendly, mm-hmm. but it couldn't lack anything in performance. In fact, we wanted to make it perform better.
Sure.
But that was the first one. We had to make it so it wasn't cost prohibitive, and we had to make it so it wasn't so difficult to be green or eco-friendly when you used it. And so we went through a myriad of different materials, and we worked with, you know, companies like DuPont and things like that to really try to find the right materials. And we tried a number of things.
Really?
With golf balls, you know, you had asked about materials inside of a golf ball. When I first got into the manufacturing process of golf balls, I was shocked at how labor intensive it was. The number of machines that a golf ball has to go through to become a golf ball is pretty amazing. And you can probably go to see some of those, how things are built.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But essentially, the modern day golf ball is a rubber core.
Hard rubber?
A hard rubber core. Right. That rubber will have fillers in it. And that's where a lot of the bad stuff is, because people put fillers in there for weight purposes. Hmm. And so you have a rubber core, and for the layman, a plastic cover. And whether that's, you know, urethane or Surlyn, that's essentially what golf balls are now. Rubber core, maybe a plastic mantle, depending on how many layers you have, if you want 5 layers or 10 layers, little layers. But essentially, you're dealing with rubber, plastic, and metal. and metal for the weight. And that's the innards of a golf ball.
You eliminated the metal part?
We took out the metal, and we used, like I said, heavy salts that provided
salt.
The same weight.
Salt?
Salts. Just,
yeah, okay.
Absolutely. That provided the same weight, same consistency, but weren't as harmful for the environment.
Huh.
And so and in doing that, we also realized we need to make something at the end. So that's the beginning. It's the end where we can recycle those and do that too. So when a golf ball is recycled, it ends up being plastic and rubber. So we can grind that up and use it to do things like playground equipment or field turf, things that plastic and rubber can be used for. And so that's the route we ended up going, but it took quite a while to come up with that because our options were unlimited on how we wanted to do it. That's how we chose to do it.
Fascinating. So when you mentioned earlier the Fire Leica Pro V mm-hmm. is a multi-piece ball.
Correct.
Okay. How many pieces and how does that compare for the Fire compared to the Earth on the amount of pieces and what makes it different other than the name?
It's a three-piece ball. And so you've got a core, you've got a mantle, and you've got a urethane cover
okay.
around the outside. And so and if you look at golf ball construction in general, the thing that makes a golf ball fly, really, is its bounce that you get, and that's where the rubber comes in. And then you have a cover. If you just had a rubber golf ball, it would bounce really well, but it would tend to explode over time mm-hmm. because rubber golf balls couldn't maintain just the hitting of the golf clubs.
Sure.
And you also have, so the cover essentially keeps the rubber ball together. And then you have the dimples that allow for aerodynamics and allows the ball to spin and get lift and drag and all that fun stuff. And so when you look at the construction of a golf balls used to be constructed, I mean, there's golf balls out there with metal cores, pure metal cores, that have no bounce, and it's all about a different concept. You have golf balls that are wound, and that was with, you know, the old Bellotta balls, where it was just round rubber bands. The problem is they weren't consistent in their winding. And so solid core golf ball technology is really what's changed over the last few decades to really make a consistent performing ball. And then the covers are more about the feel and the spin.
Okay, and that is really the differentiator that the consumer would recognize.
Mm-hmm. So if you look at what the Pro V1 did, it was pretty amazing that, you know, over, and I don't know the exact date, but, you know, from the late 90s to the early 2000s, the Pro V1 came on the market and just made a huge splash because the problem that you had prior to is you could choose feel and you could choose feel or you could choose distance.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't really choose and also with feel, you could not get durability. So you could get distance and durability or feel. Which do you want? Well, the pro players, they wanted feel.
Absolutely.
And so they didn't care about durability because they could replace their ball and they were getting paid to play those balls, so it didn't matter. But you go out and play a Bellotta, the ball lasts one hole or one shot before it's oblong. So you have no durability on that. And you shred the cover. And so what happened is you had a multi-piece ball that gave you the durability of a Surlyn. So Surlyn was how most golf balls were made before. And so you had to get it more, to get it a better feel, you'd have to make a softer Surlyn. So with a softer Surlyn, the softer it got, the more it would get shredded with your iron shots. And so with that softer Surlyn, like I said, it's a question between feel and durability. And so what the multi-piece balls gave us, they gave us the durability of a hard ball, yet the strong urethane cover that was also very pliable, and it could last. And so that really changed the golf world, and the Pro V1 was one of the first that came out and really marketed that, and just that's where they shot to the market, because they provided a pro-type ball that wouldn't destroy in 2 seconds.
And if we're lucky enough to play a round without losing a ball mm-hmm. and then go out and play hopefully another round without losing
exactly.
a ball, how planned obsolescence is critical in golf ball manufacturing.
Absolutely.
How long should a golf ball lasts, and I guess it's different for, you know, for every ball that you manufacture.
Right.
And I know it's like, oh, it depends on the player. Well,
the only way to really find out is if you stick it in a cannon and hit the balls in a golf ball cannon. And that's just a machine that whacks golf balls into a wall all day long.
Oh.
Every golf ball eventually will split apart and break. I read a stat the other day that I believe a golf ball lasts, the average golf ball lasts about 3 holes.
Wow.
Till it's lost.
Yeah, exactly.
So for the regular player, it's not ever an issue of how long the golf. But it was so bad previous to the late 90s that your golf balls would get out of sorts and you would shred it. So one good shot or one cart path, your ball's toast.
Yeah.
Now golf balls are a lot stronger because of that technology. And so you can have the best of both worlds now. So that's more just on general golf ball construction. So we use those same principles of golf ball construction. We just use some different materials and maintain the integrity of a high performance golf ball while replacing some of those materials that are less harmful or that are more harmful.
Wow.
You asked technical questions, and I'll give you technical answers.
No. I appreciate that. I appreciate it very much. So,
because I'm not an engineer.
Right. Right.
I have partners that are that.
And that's what a good manager does. So do you have differences in your dimple pattern or anything else that would also differentiate your ball against the competition?
All of our golf balls have different dimple patterns. Uh-huh. If you look out there, a lot of the golf ball patents in the world are patented for their dimple patterns.
Uh-huh.
And some, you know, say, hey, they have this dimple pattern that allows it to fly further, or this dimple pattern that allows it to get less spin. Here's what you need on a golf ball. Mm-hmm. You need a uniform dimple pattern. And so I'm not so much some of the industry doesn't like me because most of the changes in your golf ball are in your head. And so curses, I know, but
most of golf is in your head.
golf ball companies have been preaching for years that when they make a tweak to something, that it's new and improved. When in reality, what it means is I need to sell a new model next year. And so
golf club manufacturers.
There have been some significant changes in technology. The most significant in my industry experience has been when we went to solid core technology and multi-layer balls. But there's a lot of good golf balls out there and there's not a big difference between them. Mm. Let's be real.
and price points are very competitive. So
price points are competitive. So if you look at all the brands,
so you really have a unique differentiator
in
the sense that it's not harmful. And if you want, we'll buy them back.
But it's going to be, it's going to perform as well or better than anything else in their category. And that's because the technology is out there that most balls in that category are fairly similar in their performance.
When you say uniform dimple pattern,
mm-hmm.
does that mean that every dimple should be exactly the same? Because aren't there balls that...
It has to have a uniform pattern. So if it has a small, big, little, it's got to be small, big, little all around in the same pattern throughout.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I mean, there's a ball out there that has shallow dimples on one side and deep dimples on the other.
Yeah.
And that it's non-conforming because of that. And they tout that it will decrease your slice because of it. Actually true, but it's non-conforming. And so that's the thing that they fight is they want people to play a non-conforming ball. We decided that we wanted our balls to conform. And so, you know, things that non-conforming golf ball companies have done is they've made their dimple pattern not uniform, or they've made their balls heavier, or they've made their balls smaller, all of which affect the performance of golf balls. Because if you were able to make
makes a smaller golf ball
in the past,
but
they're not legal to play with,
right?
The actual rules, you can make a golf ball as big as you want and it will conform. And so if you look at, and we found this, I think it was the Top Flight XL 3000. We were doing some printing and packaging on golf balls, and they weren't fitting in the aftermarket packages that we were using, and we looked at them and compared them. They're actually a larger ball than your typical golf ball. I believe that's the brand, but you can look at that. Golf balls can actually be as big as you want them to be. They just can't be any smaller than, I think it's 1.68 inches or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so that's, so most golf balls are one size because that's as small as they can legally make them. But yeah. I remember in high school, there were these cheater balls. I think they were, what was it? It was Cayman Golf or something. They made balls that were a little bit smaller so they could go further. You can make a golf ball. So if you make a smaller, heavier golf ball, it's going to fly a lot further. Mm-hmm. You just can't legally play with it in any tournaments.
What is that supposed to mean?
Exactly. I mean, so there's a big market out there. I mean, yeah. You know, you look at golf, and golf as an industry is changing. And a lot of it is due to sports in general. I look at sports nowadays. When I was growing up, we just played all the sports. We had fun time at it. We enjoyed it, and it was a fun thing. Now it seems like everything is just specialized. Right. It's like, you're going to be a golfer, so let's put you through this training regimen, and you're going to beat balls since when you're 5 years old, and you're going to become...
Right, when we were growing up, it was the Soviet gymnastics team.
Seriously, that's what almost every sport is like now.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah, the Ledbetter school for these 12-year-olds.
Exactly, because I want to be a professional golfer, and to actually succeed now, you pretty much have to go, if you want to succeed at the top level, you pretty much have to be in that that system when you're young, simply because in any sport, they're so specialized, and you get so many hours of practice. Whereas when I grew up, I didn't have a chance, because I just played everything and enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And, you know, but everyone wanted to be a professional athlete, and... So now, as you get older and you get past the professional athlete stage, you know, I gave up the dream of it, 5 years ago?
I recently heard
it never happened, but I gave the dream up 5 years ago.
So I have, I like to draw a line around my golf ball, mm-hmm. right? Because it gets me perpendicular when I'm teeing off. It gives me a line when I'm putting. So I use one of those GoPro things that spins the ball real fast, and I'm able to put the line on it. And mm-hmm. supposedly it's a gyroscopic thing that gets the ball, so it's spinning, so it's on its core center, mm-hmm. right? Is that crap? I mean, is that legit? I mean, are golf balls basically lopsided or something? That,
you know,
when they're brand new.
If you look at the injection molding process, and so there's
we've now talked about this. What does that mean?
So if you look at a standard two-piece golf ball, mm-hmm. that's a Sirlin covered golf ball, the rubber core plastic cover. So you take it's one process to make the core. Then you have to take that core, put it in an injection molding, and then you inject plastic around that core. And yes, if you cut a golf ball open, the equipment that's used is accurate to a point, but there are, and this is where you can get in. And I said, most golf balls are fairly well made. There's manufacturing facilities that just make cheap product out there.
Sure.
And so if you look at some of that cheap product, if you cut a golf ball in half, you will see that the thickness of the plastic is thicker on one side and thinner on the other. That just means it was off center when that plastic was molded around it. Hmm. And so you have that out there. For the most part, it's pretty good. And any name brand golf ball, you're gonna get pretty good. So can it be off center? Yeah. Mm. Is it gonna matter to your game? No.
Don't tell me that.
I'm telling you that. I'm sorry. I'm breaking all the rules of
marketing. I'm done. I'm taking my ball and going home. I'm not playing with you anymore.
Well, and you know, Tiger Woods might be able to figure that out. If he hit a number of them mm-hmm. right in a row, he's sensitive enough to that. You and I, no.
No.
I mean, and that's... Okay. That's the industry we live in. I won't destroy your industry anymore because I love it. But yeah, a lot of the marketing that we have has been fed to us by manufacturers of equipment.
Yeah. So this article in the Wall Street Journal.
Yes.
It talks about how Arnold Palmer is a longtime supporter of rolling back the distance on golf balls. Mm-hmm. and that Tiger Woods and other players.
I believe Jack
Nicklaus was in there, and they've said yes, the same thing, and mainly because they're saying that new courses, it's too expensive to build a new mm-hmm. course, that they need an extra 40 to 60 acres of land mm-hmm. To not only to build it, to maintain it. And golf courses, you know, we've talked about this on the show, they're just getting longer and longer. And frankly, that's playing into the hands of these pros. I mean, because they're hitting the ball farther. Yeah, well, make your short game tougher, right? So one of the things that they're talking about is like changing the ball. Mm-hmm. Making it less, or having bifurcation on, forget on bifurcation right. on clubs, bifurcation on balls, that there should be a ball standard for the tour and a ball standard for everybody else. Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
A lot of thoughts, actually.
I bet.
As I just looked at the article, you look at the people that are mentioned in there that are for that, and notice that all great golfers, I believe they're all involved in golf course design and management now. So if you look at the...
Reads between the lines, does he?
So if you look at their what they're thinking about, I mean, you have to consider what it takes to build a golf course. So those are very valid thoughts when you look at the management and the design of a golf course.
Sure.
Because, and quite frankly, the land it takes... And, you know, you make these things longer and longer because as a society, our athletes are more physically fit, our equipment's better, and yes, we can hit it harder, farther now. And like you said, you know, there's kids hitting it 350 yards, and it's crazy.
Yep.
And a lot of it has to do with fitness, and a lot of it has to do with equipment improvements. And so rules can move it back. And to be honest, to preserve the integrity of the game, I totally understand limiting some of the distance measures, some of the things that we can do, we just don't do because it takes away the fun of the game of golf. If you have to hit it 400 yards on a drive just to be competitive, then not many people are going to play golf. Mm-hmm. And I like to go play golf now for fun. As I told you, I gave up my aspirations of being a professional athlete. And those of you that can't see me, realize that I should have given those up at birth, but you know, I was a kid, and so when I golf purely so I enjoy being outside, I enjoy the game, and I enjoy the people I'm with. And to me, that's what this game's all about. And the industry as a whole is realizing that golf needs to be fun. If it's all about farther and bigger and more specialized, you're going to lose players because we have a whole lot of other things we can do with our time.
Right.
And for golf to be successful and for it to be a long-term, not educational, but physical activity that people enjoy and a fun game, it's got to be fun. And so there's going to be a lot more discussions about this. Mm-hmm. Anchoring putting is just the beginning of that rule. And there's a lot of different thoughts out there, and some I think are very, very valid. Because I want to go out and have fun, and I'm not earning money when I golf. Most people aren't.
Well, you know, I understand the integrity of the game stuff, but aren't we trying to open the game to a new generation and to grow the game? And when I understand grow the game to mean is you're getting more players to start the game than to leave the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think over the last couple of years that more people are leaving than starting.
I would agree with that.
And so it's difficult to find ways to make that work. That's why I think your product speaks to the future of the game. I think that the game golf, which we've had on the show, I think that speaks to the future of the game. And I commend you guys for stepping out, and because the establishment, the USGA, they're all very stuck in their ways. They don't understand, you know, it seems like they don't move forward in progressing on expanding the game. It's just like they want to keep their rules.
Well, and I think they understand. I think that they're a little bit conflicted because the USGA deals with competitive golf. And growing the game may not be about competitive golf. It may be about recreational golf.
Well, I think the PGA deals with competitive golf. I think the USGA is about...
And you think they're not tied together.
Well, you know,
I've got a bridge to sell you.
Yeah, right, exactly. No, but to me, it's like... the USGA is an advocate for the golf course, not the golfer, in my mind. Right? The rules are so the golf course can beat you. And yet we want to go out there and beat the golf course.
Yeah, we do.
But they don't want to listen to that. Anyway.
That's a whole other discussion. I'll have that discussion with you off air.
Yeah, right, exactly. So one of the things in this story that I found very interesting that John Paul wrote, he says that USGA in 2005 requested and eventually received prototypes from 8 or 9 manufacturers and conducted tests with live players to see how balls would be that would reduce golf's environmental impact. They have declared, it says here, the USGA declared a long-term environmental sustainability to be one of its top policy issues. Have they knocked on your door?
They have not.
Do they know you exist?
I don't know.
Should you not be part of this conversation?
As far as who are you talking about? Him? This Arthur?
No, or the USGA.
Oh, the USGA knows we exist. We're conforming golf ball. We send our balls to them for testing every year.
And you paid for your licensing, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Okay, so of course they know you exist. You've had to be a licensee. But if they're talking about long-term sustainability, environmental impact, shouldn't you be a very high on their list? And shouldn't there be other companies knocking on your door going, how do you do this? Because we want to get in that game.
Absolutely, there should.
But they're not.
Follow the money.
Yeah. You're a lot of fun with it.
I'm no fun. It's the reality of my business. I recognize where we stand. There's a lot of great things that if they're not brought up by the right people, they don't become so great.
So do you think these are just press notes that the USGA is actually saying that, or do you think that they're actually serious?
No, golf in general has had a bad rap for being an environmental scourge on the land.
Of course.
Whether they are or not, they've had a bad rap. And so they're looking to make golf more fun because they want to preserve their game. They're looking to make golf more environmentally friendly. A lot of it has to do with water usage on the course and land usage, but also in the equipment side. And so for self-preservation, they have to look at these issues. How they look at them, obviously I can't control that. But they have to if they want to preserve the game and their place in the game. Otherwise, they'll get passed on because these issues don't go away. And we want to be at the forefront. And so we thought of this a long time ago, and we figure the best thing that we can do is lead the pack and be successful. If we can do that, then they will be knocking on our door and want our input.
And I hope they do.
I hope so too.
I think that would be awesome. It would definitely be something that would get your name into,
absolutely,
without having to pay.
Then maybe we'll pay a player or two.
Exactly. So what is the let's wrap this up and look into the crystal ball. What's the viability of the future for Dixon Golf?
Very strong. We're having great success working with charities. We've grown. It took a few years. We were toiling and deciding how to make a great product into a great business.
Yeah.
We feel that we've figured that out. And so we've been growing tremendously over the last couple of years in general. And we'll probably do 2 or 3 times this year what we did last year.
Great.
And we'll continue to grow and progress because once people get it and they like it, they stick with it.
Awesome.
And so we're excited for the future. Very excited.
On your website, you have an ambassador program?
Tell me
how you get involved so I can get my name on there.
We sponsor a lot of charity golf tournaments, and one of the things that we provide is we sponsor one lucky player in some of those tournaments, and they're able to become an amateur endorser. And so as an amateur endorser, they do get on our website as well as some other prizes that they get, and they can brag that they're and endorsed by a golf ball company. So it's kind of cool.
I've been bragging about this golf ball company for years, and I don't see my name on that list.
I know some guys you should talk to. You're too good.
No. No. Well, listen, William Carey, president of Dixon Golf, DixonGolf.com. We have the balls for sale on our website. If you have any questions, please click on the Hey Fred button and ask me. But the Spirit ball for women, the Wind for long drive and for distance hitters. We're focused on that.
Or that want more distance.
Or that want more distance. The Earth ball for everybody, right? which is my ball of choice. And then the Fire, which is your high-end, top of the marketplace. Mm-hmm. Probably Don Cheadle's favorite ball.
Absolutely.
I've actually had a chance to play, although I love the Earth ball, I really like and play better when I play with the Fire. I can't afford it, but I really like. But you know, I can't afford a Pro V1. I can't.
Well, and when obviously when I golf with the Fireball, because
you know people.
But I know a guy, and the reality is exactly the reality is my game's more suited to the Earth ball.
Exactly.
It's a pride thing. It's why we all want to golf with the best, you know.
Well. I wish you nothing but long term success, and you know I'm cheerleading, not because my name is green, but it kind of works out.
It works. Well, I really appreciate it. We appreciate being on your podcast. Shout out to all the people that have supported this podcast for so long, and it's growing. It's just very impressive that you've been able to build it and grow it. So thanks for letting me be on the show.
No, thank you. Wow, that was really nice. After further behind-the-scenes conversations, I'm really happy to say that we're just about to institute some new pricing and carry the entire line of Dixon balls at golfsmarter.com. We will have the best prices and deals on the Fire, Earth, Wind, and Spirit balls. This also includes increased savings for all Golf Smarter members, so please have a little patience, but continue checking our Golfer Smart at golfsmarter.com. And thank you to our newest Golf Smarter members, Thomas Grand of Carmel, Indiana, and Clark Mather of Tacoma, Washington. These two Golf Smarter members are each going to receive a free 30-count bottle of Alpha Brain by Onnit Labs. Click on the Alpha Brain ad at golfsmarter.com to find out more. And thanks again to you for becoming a Golf Smarter member and helping keep the content flowing. We've had a big rush on new memberships recently, I'm happy to say, probably because we were featured in iTunes as their number one recommended golf podcast during the week of the Masters. So iTunes is the most powerful and influential of all the podcast aggregators. So I have a favor. If you could, and I've asked before and I will continue to do so, but if you could please leave an honest review about Golf Smarter on iTunes or podcasts, if that's where you get it from, you will have a tremendous influence on those who are searching for the best golf podcasts. Hopefully the weather where you are, considering you're in the Northern Hemisphere, is finally golf weather. But even if it's not, just remember, practice your putting indoors as often as possible, and you'll be so happy and surprised at how good you are once you return to the course. Also, as always, thanks for your suggestions. We've got a couple of episodes coming up based on what you wanted to hear. So if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please, please, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.